Bharat Maharaj was always engaged in devotional service within his mind. Since he had executed the regular principles continuously for three lives, he was not interested in continuing to execute them, although his Brahmin father wanted him to do so. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gyananjala Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. In India, there are a category of Brahmins called Smarta Brahmins, and they're interested in following regular principles, but not in achieving the actual goal of the regular principles, which is ecstatic love of God. Also, Rupa Goswami writes in the Nectar of Instruction that there's niyamagraha, niyamagraha, following rules mechanically, either neglecting the rules entirely, which is a mistake, or following the rules mechanically for prestige or position, but not trying to get the result or the goal of those rules. The goal of the rules is to develop ecstatic love of God. But if you're interested in a mundane position of power and prestige, then those rules become a way to situate you in a particular caste so you can exploit the subcastes. That's how Kali Yuga began. It began when the Brahmins began to misuse their power. And from that, when the Kshatriyas stopped listening to the Brahmins, and they became degraded, because the Kshatriya needs to take instruction. He's very powerful, but situated in the mode of passion, he may not always see things in the balanced and proper perspective as someone in the mode of goodness does. So when the Kshatriyas don't listen to the Brahmins, they get carried away with power. And then the Vaishyas revolted against the Kshatriyas because the Kshatriyas were unqualified, but the Vaishyas are not qualified either. So they essentially the whole system broke down. But this is a relatively anomalous condition, because for 90% of the Chatur Yuga, the system is strongly in force. The Chatur Yuga consists of Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dvapara, and Kali Yuga, and adds up to 4.32 million years. Kali Yuga is only 432,000 years, so it's exactly 10% of the Chatur Yuga. So 90% of the time, things are running smoothly. 10% of the times, anomalies set in. Kali Yuga is an anomalous situation. And you might wonder, why does Krishna arrange this? Because it is arranged by Krishna. The fundamental postulate of Vaishnava theology is that Krishna controls everything, literally everything. Not a blade of grass moves, not an electron vibrates without the will of the Supreme. So Kali Yuga is actually a creation of Krishna, because in Kali Yuga, you get to see how you suffer when you don't try to surrender to Krishna's program, either for material enjoyment, which is karmakanda. Krishna's established a way to enjoy the material world without implicating yourself too much immediately. The karmakandiya system, followed by a karmi, is a way to gradually promote yourself while not incurring tremendous sinful reactions, which will retard your progress. So whether you desire material enjoyment or spiritual benefit, a sane person will follow the way Krishna has given for performing these activities. But Kali Yuga is an anomalous condition in which people hope to elevate themselves by entirely ignoring Krishna's system. So Krishna says, all right, here you go. This is your chance. Just see what a mess you can make of things. Initially, people they have the idea today of liberation, women's liberation or gay liberation or this liberation or that liberation. Everyone has a conception of how they will be happy or liberated from miseries or difficulties. But factual liberation really only comes when we're following Krishna's instructions. So whatever you desire, if you want to enjoy the material world, or you want to get out of the material world, or you want to become a pure devotee, that Krishna has set up a system for doing this. Karmakandiya, Jnanakanda, Upasanakanda. Upasana means worship. That's actually the best out of all these three, is the worship of Vishnu. But very exalted persons, such are being mentioned here, Jada Bharat is very exalted. He was already way beyond these systems, because internally he was so absorbed, he was always thinking of Krishna. within his heart. All of the things we're doing are actually intended to bring us to the stage of always thinking of Krishna. The externals are needed as long as the internal situation is not fully mature. Our internal situation now is not fully mature in devotional service. Internally we have anartas, so we're struggling against them. So if we were just to go off somewhere alone and try to sit down and remember Krishna, it would not work because the internal situation is too polluted due to association with the material energy for many lifetimes. That has been our program. But by following the systematic procedure, seeing the deities, worshipping the deities, chanting the holy name, honoring the prasad, reading Srimad Bhagavatam, and working for the mission of the spiritual master, if we do all these things, then gradually the internal situation becomes cleansed. And when the internal situation is fully cleansed, one always remembers Krishna everywhere and anywhere. That's how you can tell you're making advancement, is that you find it easier and easier to remember Krishna within your heart. And if we're not on that level, we should take help from the systematic and scientific procedures given by the spiritual masters in our lineage in order to become situated in the position of always remembering Krishna. We've heard about Prahlad Maharaj in recent classes. His remembrance was literally unbreakable. There was no situation he could be put into that would decrease his intense meditation on the Lord. Simply no situation. Even his physical body was being tortured, thrown in boiling oil, or thrown under the feet of huge elephants. At one point, Hiranyakasipu threw him off a cliff. Even that, there was literally no situation that could stop his remembrance of Krishna. Whereas our situation is even situated within all favorable environment, it's still difficult to remember Krishna. So therefore, devotional service is so scientific, one can easily see where one is at. Or another example, a devotee like Parameshwar who travels almost constantly in a van but feels no inconvenience. He happily executes his devotional service without forgetting Krishna. He goes just from one festival in the summertime, constantly traveling. They're traveling on warp tour. They do 20,000 miles in 2 months. He doesn't feel any lack of remembrance of Krishna. He feels an enhancement in his remembrance of Krishna, even though he may be 12 hours out preaching to scantily clad people in the age of Kali, which is a great challenge for the classical brahmacharya system. A jamil, he just saw one low-class person, man, and one low-class woman embracing, and that was enough. Then he struggled within his mind because the internal situation was not purified, so that the externals conquered him, and then he fell down, and for decades, he was a young Brahmin when he fell down, but for decades, until he was in his 80s, he was engaged in illicit and immoral activities just by seeing one Shudra and Shudrani. So in Kali Yuga, seeing a Shudra and Shudrani is... Shudras are exalted compared to the category of persons we're dealing with. But still, because the internal situation of persons like Parameshwara, somehow or other, in previous lives or intense execution in this life, whatever it takes, somehow or other, he has reached the stage where he can remember Krishna in very difficult circumstances. I did warp tour for 2 summers. That's why I'm warped now. I did 2006, 2007, and that was all I could handle. Mainly it was the loud rock and roll music that wiped me out. By Krishna's mercy, I could handle the forms and other things, but the constant loud pounding, and it's like a jackhammer, it's one of the lowest kinds of music. Of all forms of rock and roll, this punk rock is the most, it's like machines grating against each other. And hearing it for 12 hours a day. Parameshwara said at first he thought it was he would give it up the first day when he first started out. But magically he told me the sound changed into a kirtan. He told me this personally. It was an amazing thing. It was transformed. The jackhammer-like grating of metallic instruments was transformed into a kirtan. So he hears a kirtan when he's out there. These things are actually possible if you're devoted. Because Krishna can do anything. Prabhupada would routinely and repeatedly challenge his disciples to go beyond their comfort zones. Like in 1971, when they put on a huge pandal, the first pandal program in Mumbai, where Radhanath Swami met Srila Prabhupada. That was in January of 71. So Prabhupada came to Shamsundar and Giriraj Prabhu, he was not yet Giriraj Maharaj, and unveiled his plan, and the devotees said, this is impossible. They wanted to pandal for 20,000 people a night for a whole week, cooking for 20,000 people every night. The devotees had no money. Getting a huge tent and a sound system and everything, very modern, up-to-date, so many endeavors and a massive publicity thing, including a flying balloon, a blimp, with Hare Krishna written all over it. And at first of all, I said, this is impossible. Prabhupada said, impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. We know also the Chaitanya Charitamrita Marathon of 1973, when also Rameshwar, when Prabhupada confronted Rameshwar with stepping up the production from, they were doing two books a month, the BBT was turning out two books a month, and Prabhupada said, I want 17 books in 2 months. The full Chaitanya Charitamrita, the original gold series, was of 17 volumes. All in 2 months. Rameshwar said, Prabhupada, this is impossible. And Prabhupada said, what can Krishna not do? What's impossible is our particular mental barriers that we throw up. For Krishna or for the pure devotee, there's actually nothing impossible. Prabhupada repeatedly did this to his disciples to bring them to a higher stage of devotion. And the devotees were ecstatic when they surrendered to it. Radha Vallabha was the production manager and Rameshwar was the head of the BBT at the time. BBT had just moved to Los Angeles. They were just setting up. Things weren't even ready yet. It started in Boston, then went to New York, and then they relocated to Los Angeles. They were just getting the building set up. Prabhupada was traveling around the world. He reached Hawaii a month before, and Prabhupada kept calling. Every day, Prabhupada's secretary was calling Los Angeles. Are you set up? Are you beginning? And Rameshwar and Radha Vallabha, they were just filled with transcendental anxiety. The neophyte, the Kanishta Adhikari, seeks a comfortable situation in devotional service. That's the hallmark or trademark of a Kanishta Adhikari. He wants a comfortable position in devotional service. It makes sense. When you first join the temple, we're taking shelter from the onslaught of Kali Yuga. It's very severe, the pernicious effects of the onslaught of Kali Yuga. So we stumble into the temple. We're so happy just to be in the temple when we first come. The last thing we're thinking about is going out and doing austerities to give Krishna to others. But the program is scientific. If we follow the program diligently, the result is that we actually get purified. And as we get purified, we come to Majjhima Adhikari, Majjhima Bhakta. And Majjhima Bhakta is one who takes the mission of the spiritual master very seriously. He feels indebted to the spiritual master. He feels a great desire. I really want to please my Guru Maharaj. I'm really tired of having anartas and no taste for Krishna's holy name. I'm really tired of my mind being yanked left and right by the pullings of the senses. So the Majjhima Bhakta is very serious in his execution of sadhana bhakti, and he wants to assist the spiritual master. And Majjhima Bhaktas are very efficient at preaching. They're very useful for the preaching mission. So Prabhupada was always trying to elevate his disciples. And those who surrendered very quickly, they came to the Majjhima or even higher platform because of Prabhupada's spiritual power. And then Prabhupada would engage them in amazing activities. Again and again, he would surprise the devotees. Also in 1971 in England, Prabhupada first unveiled the plans for Mayapur. Prabhupada was walking around London, taking morning walks, seeing the tall. He would ask Shamsundar, how tall is this building? Shamsundar would say, this one is 250 feet tall. And then they would look at another building. This one is 300 feet. Prabhupada said, the temple of understanding must be taller than all of these. The Adbhuta Mandir in Mayapur. And the devotees were struck with wonder because at that time the movement was just beginning. No one had any money. Or in Detroit, it's described in Lilamrita. Prabhupada came to Detroit and the devotees had an old building. The temple president was Govardhan Prabhu, and they were looking for a new building in Detroit. The lease was going to run out soon, so they were looking around, and the devotees mentioned the Fisher Mansion. And but then they also told Prabhupada, it's in a very bad neighborhood. There are many criminals, and the building is run down. We'll have to pay a lot to bring it up to a proper standard. They gave all kinds of negative reasons, but the more Prabhupada heard, the more Prabhupada said, this is the right building. So they went and they looked at the building. And each room, the man was asking $350,000 for it. And Prabhupada looked, and without saying anything, Prabhupada noticed that each room was worth $350,000. It was full of marble, Italian marble and Greek carvings. It was completely amazing place, ornate. Even the bathroom was worth $100,000. With all these ornate tiles and gold inlaid filigree and marble. But Prabhupada was very cool. He didn't let on that he thought he was getting a great deal. Prabhupada instead, he walked through all the rooms, and in fact he noted the main room had three arches, perfect for the temple, where we have the three arches for the three altars. So Prabhupada was, and the devotees kept saying negative things, it's a bad neighborhood, there are many criminals. So Prabhupada sat down with the owner and said, we are actually beggars, we are sannyasis, so you should donate the building to us. That's the first thing Prabhupada said. And the man, of course, he was speechless. He just didn't know. You don't bargain like that. So the man started stammering and saying, Swamiji, I took a big loss. I had so many new plumbing and some this new and so many things. Prabhupada said, then how much do you want? The man said, I want $350,000. Prabhupada said, I'll give you $300,000 cash. And the man, he was like struggling. Then all of a sudden he agreed. And Prabhupada actually had no money at the time. He came with zero money. But he made two disciples. One was Levant. She was the heir to the Ruth, Walter Ruther's, the union, yeah. He was the union leader. And he made another disciple, Ambarish, who is heir to the Ford, the huge Ford Motor Company. So for them, it was pocket change. $300,000 was pocket change. So Prabhupada just, after they left the building, Prabhupada turned to Ambarish and he said, is this possible? And Ambarish says, yes, no problem. So he bought the building, and now it's worth vastly more. It's actually, the neighborhood is coming up. It's being improved. Prabhupada just had this transcendental vision, or we heard yesterday from Nityananda Prabhu, Jew, who was actually 20 miles north of Bombay at the time. It was way out in the middle of nowhere. It was not even developed yet at the time Prabhupada was looking at it. Actually, because Prabhupada is Tri Kalagya, he looked at it in the 1930s, believe it or not, when he was doing his pharmaceutical business. He came to Mumbai to do some pharmaceutical work. That's described in Lilamrita. That in 1930s, Prabhupada looked at Juhu, and because the pure devotee is Tri Kalagya, he sees the three phases of time, Prabhupada thought, this will be ideal. Now that was in the 30s. 1930s. Prabhupada was known at those times among his godbrothers as Abhai Babu. He was a grihastha and a businessman. He was not a prominent member of the Gaudiya Math at all. In fact, it was there in Mumbai in the 1930s. Prabhupada was assisting his godbrothers, the sannyasis who were there. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had many sannyasi disciples, dozens of sannyasi disciples. So they would head up each math. So there was the Gaudiya Math Mumbai, and Prabhupada was so expert, he would get lots of donations. So one of the sannyasis approached Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and said, this Abhai Babu is so expert, we should make him temple president of the Mumbai temple. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, don't disturb him, in the future he'll do everything by himself. They couldn't understand what was meant. See, also Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is Tri Kalagya. These great personalities, they literally see the future. They literally see the three phases of time. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, the very first word he said to Prabhupada was, even when Prabhupada was just offering obeisance, barely getting up to take a seat, the very first word he exchanged with Srila Prabhupada is, you're an intelligent young man, why don't you preach Krishna consciousness all over the world in the English language? He's not a disciple. He's not in the position of guru and disciple. It's like a stranger ordering some stranger to do a life mission. You just walk up to somebody and say, you should do this with your life. How outrageous. How incredible. But Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta could see, this is a great, I'm dealing with a supremely great soul here, a pure devotee. Prabhupada's position at the time was grihastha, but he's nityasiddha. So these exalted nityasiddhas, they can recognize each other. So he cut through all the formalities. No, hello, and the weather is nice today, and how are you doing? He cut through all that stuff. You should go to the West and preach. And Prabhupada was a follower of Gandhi at the time, wearing a kind of cloth, a homemade cloth in rejection of the British-made foreign cloth. So Prabhupada began to, he thought this is very presumptuous. So Prabhupada raised an argument naturally, as you would do, saying we're a dependent nation. First we have to get freedom. How can we do anything when we're under the yoke of foreign rule? So Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Sarasvati Thakura was so expert, he began systematically quoting from Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and various other scriptures, and Śrīla Prabhupada knew these scriptures and respected them. But Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta was so expert, he was so analytical, he was actually a genius. He had a photographic memory. And he was so powerful and so utterly fixed in the mission of Śrī Caitanya Mahāprabhu that Prabhupada just felt his defenses being crushed. He would offer various arguments, Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta would just smash them all. Prabhupada said, this is the first time I was ever defeated. Prabhupada was expert at debate. He was the leader of his friends at Scottish Churches College. That's where Prabhupada went to college. It was a British school. Prabhupada rejected his diploma. By the time it came, after going through the 4 years of college, he decided it was not worth taking the diploma, so he just didn't show up for the diploma. But he was the leader of his friends, Śrīla Prabhupada, naturally, highly intelligent. So he was expert in debate. So Prabhupada said, this is the first time I was ever defeated when I met Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta. But I took it as a great gain. It was not actually a loss. Because this was the role. The pure devotee plays the role. Prabhupada was playing the role of the disciple. He's nityasiddha. Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Sarasvati Thakura is playing the role of the great acharya. He was very humble. Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Sarasvati Thakura would address everyone who would offer him obeisances. He would say, Dasosmi, I'm your servant. And someone would offer him obeisances. He was very humble, although inconceivably qualified. So these nityasiddhas, they play whatever role. Also, Jada Bharat, he's a great personality. He's playing exactly the role that Krishna wants him to play. He did not initially preach to his family members because it would not have been effective, but later when the opportunity came, when Krishna wanted him to preach, as we will see, he preached very eloquently to Rahugana Maharaj, a great king. So Prabhupada said, by the end of the evening, with his spiritual master, he said, in my heart, I accepted him then and there as my spiritual master. His formal diksha came 11 years later, in Allahabad in 1933. Prabhupada met his spiritual master in 1922 in Calcutta, in the old Calcutta temple, before they got the Bagh Bazar, that was the main temple. First he met his spiritual master at the Ulta Dunga, it was a smaller temple. So Prabhupada right then, after that meeting, he began studying the works of Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Sarasvati Thakura and Śrīla Bhaktivinoda Thakura. Bhaktivinoda Thakura is also in this elite category of nityasiddhas. He is also Trikalagya. He saw, 100 years ago, he saw the Adbhuta Mandir rising above the plain. Śrīla Bhaktivinoda Thakura had a house across the Jalangi, and he would look across. There was nothing there at the time. There was just fields. But he saw with his spiritual vision that a great temple would rise, the Adbhuta Mandir. In fact, Lord Nityananda predicted it 400 years earlier when he took Jiva Goswami on a parikrama of Navadvip Dham. Lord Nityananda predicted, and this is recorded in Bhaktivinoda Thakura's book called the Navadvip Dham Mahatmya, written by Bhaktivinoda Thakura. It describes how Lord Nityananda gave a tour to Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami was mortified at having missed all the leelas. He came just after Lord Chaitanya. So he was so unhappy. he actually missed out on seeing. You can imagine you just miss seeing the leelas of Lord Chaitanya. So he was so unhappy. And he's such a pure devotee. Jiva Goswami is also in this category of pure Nitya Siddha Vaishnav. So he had such a strong desire to see the leelas that although Nityananda had left the planet, he reappeared. Lord Nityananda reappeared by his mystic potency in front of Jiva Goswami. And Jiva Goswami fell at his lotus feet, bathing his feet with tears of ecstatic love. And then Lord Nityananda took Jiva Goswami in a parikrama of the great places of Navadvip Dham, where Lord Chaitanya had performed his pastimes, the house of Shivas Thakur, the Kazi's house, so many wonderful places where Lord Chaitanya had performed his leelas. And Jiva Goswami was in ecstasy. And part of the parikrama, Lord Nityananda pointed to, he said, here a great temple will rise 400 years from now. A great temple will rise. They literally saw these things. We may imagine or analyze things to predict. We may have some capacity to predict based on our intelligence. We can predict based on knowing someone's character what they will do to some extent. But these exalted Nitya Siddhas, they can actually see the future. They're actually Trikalagya. This is their potency. So Jadabhard, he was performing exactly the activities that Krishna wanted him. He would not take any risks. In this life, he wanted to make sure there would not be even the slightest chance of falling into ignorance or illusion. And it's described, Prabhupada is saying in the purport, that he was constantly performing devotional service within his mind. He was so exalted that he could internally be absorbed in devotional service. Also, Raghunath Das Goswami, he could do this. He sat by Radha Kund for decades. He also wanted to give up his life. After Lord Chaitanya left, he was mortified. He had spent 18 years. Raghunath Das was so intimate, so exalted, he spent 18 years with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Jagannath Puri. The final 18, the Antya-lila of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Jagannath Puri. Raghunath Das Goswami was the assistant of Swarup Damodar Goswami. And Swarup Damodar Goswami was one of the most intimate associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. All night long in the Gambira, which was a room in the house of Kashi Misha, Lord Chaitanya would simply be absorbed in the mood of separation. Srimati Radharani's mood of separation from Krishna. So Lord Chaitanya would, he didn't even sleep the whole night. So intense was his ecstatic love for Krishna that he didn't sleep the whole night. He would simply be absorbed in pastimes, thinking of pastimes and discussing them with two intimate associates, Ram Ananda Roy, who was actually Vishaka from Vraj Leela, and Swarup Damodar Goswami, who was Lalita from Vraj Leela. Just as these two intimate associates of Srimati Radharani would console her when she was feeling separation from Krishna, in the same way, when Krishna wanted to taste the mood of Srimati Radharani as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, these two associates, Ram Ananda Roy and Swarup Damodar, they would assist the Lord by helping in enhancing his particular moods. Swarup Damodar was so intimate with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Chaitanya didn't even have to say which kind of mood he was in. Swarup Damodar knew just by looking at he could feel the internal heart of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he would feel which particular mood of ecstatic love that Lord Chaitanya was in and at that moment, and he would sing songs appropriate to that particular mood. He would sing songs of great acharyas just to enhance the particular kind of mood that Lord Chaitanya was in. This shows the variety of spiritual life. Spiritual life is not stereotyped. There are so many unlimited leelas of Vrindavan that Lord Chaitanya would taste, just as we taste different experiences, Lord Chaitanya would taste the different leelas of Lord Krishna. And Swarup Damodar and Ramananda Roy would simply sing songs and recite verses to enhance his mood, or they would hold on to each other's necks and cry in ecstatic love of God. They would pass the whole night like that. And then they would go and perform their duties, sometimes that they didn't sleep at all, didn't even sleep in the day or at night. They're so empowered and enlivened by Krishna Katha. Krishna Katha has a magical effect on the heart. When the heart begins to get somewhat purified, Krishna Katha has a magical effect in that you don't get tired of hearing it. You can just go on hearing, like Maharaj Parikit, he just sat down. He wasn't thinking, you know, what arrangements I have to make for sabji and pakoras or sweet rice, or maybe Sunday is coming. Maybe I should wait. I'll start my fast after Sunday. He forgot about all those things. He just sat down and became absorbed in hearing Maharaj Parikit. And Shukadeva Goswami was absorbed in speaking. And occasionally throughout the discourse, Shukadeva Goswami would say, "Hey Rajan," he would say, "Oh my king." They would just be absorbed in ecstasy. They would embrace each other. Sometimes Shukadeva Goswami would embrace Maharaj Parikit. All the sages were just sitting there, rapt, with rapt attention. They were hearing the discourse. Narada Muni was there, Vyasadeva. The guru and param guru of Shukadeva Goswami were just sitting and listening to their disciple and grand disciple speaking, because Shukadeva Goswami was so qualified. He's considered the ideal, the exemplary Bhagavat reciter. So no one was even thinking about, you know, arrangements for eating or sleeping. This is how we can tell we're advancing. There are quantitative symptoms by which we can judge our advancement. Devotional service is so nice, it's so scientific, that detachment, knowledge and detachment are the automatic result of the proper execution of devotional service. One automatically becomes detached, renunciation, and one automatically acquires knowledge, jnana and vairagya, which the yogis have to do intense austerities for a very long time. And in the course of their austerities, generally King Indra sends an apsara and finishes off their austerities. And they get diverted. So the path of Ashtanga Yoga, not only is it much more difficult and much longer, but it's fraught with difficulties because you're not getting param dristva. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 2:59, the best way to detach yourself is in the strength of a higher pleasure. But there's no... Ashtanga Yoga is very dry and mechanical. Nowadays, the New Agers, they have all this romantic conception. Oh, it's so wonderful to be a yogi sitting. But actually, it's horrible. It's ugra. It's very difficult work. It's ugra. It's difficult. It's hard. It's mechanical. There's no bhav. There's no ecstatic exchange. Whereas again and again throughout the Vaishnava literature, we're reading about the loving exchanges. Especially Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so personal. He would embrace his devotees. He would put sandalwood paste on their foreheads and give them a flower garland. He would go to each devotee out of hundreds of devotees in an assembly. Lord Chaitanya would embrace each Vaishnava and glorify each Vaishnava, which was a source of embarrassment because the devotee doesn't want to be glorified. He would glorify each devotee like Vasudev Dat. He would say, "My body belongs to Vasudev Dat." He would say, "Oh, devotees, please hear. I'm no longer independent. My body belongs to Vasudev Dat. He can sell me in any marketplace." He would say it again and again with utter sincerity, because Vasudev Dat was such an exalted Vaishnava. He conquered the heart of the Lord. His devotional service was so pleasing to the Lord that the Lord became captivated, enchanted by his devotional service. That's the power of devotional service. Although the jiva is very insignificant, constitutionally or inherently, we have very little potency. Actually, we have no potency, to be honest. Everything we have is Krishna's. But there's one thing, there's one potency that Krishna has invested within the insignificant, 1/10,000th, the tip of a hair, insignificant jivatma, the potency of bhakti. When that bhakti is actually unmotivated and uninterrupted, ohaitiki apratiyata, those are the conditions. When you meet those two conditions, then Krishna becomes enchanted by your bhakti. Ohaitiki apratiyata, yayatma suprasidati, totally satisfied, suprasidati, totally, to the highest extent, suprasidati. Bhagavatam, 1st canon, chapter 2, text 6. That's this verse. Savai pumsam paro dharmo yato bhaktir adhoksaje ahoitaki apatiyata yayatma su prasidati. Everyone is looking for ultimate satisfaction. And the formula is given scientifically in the Srimad Bhagavatam. You have to meet these two criterion. Ahoitaki, that means no material motive. We have plenty of reasons, or hetu means reason or cause. We have plenty of motivation, but it's not material. The Vaishnavas have a very strong motivation, namely to satisfy Krishna and the spiritual master. So it's not that we have no motivation. The Buddhistic program is to make yourself void or have no desires at all. But then a rock is more efficient. A rock has already achieved that. It's already perfectly in Satori. It has no material desires. Its concentration is perfect. But what's the use of that? So the Vaishnav program is not to destroy the function of the mind. The mind has a natural function, which is to think of how to serve Krishna, to constantly chant the glories of the Lord. That's what Jada Bharat is doing internally. For us, it would be a mistake to try to imitate. We cannot remember the Lord constantly. But for him, that was the perfectly appropriate kind of devotional service that Krishna wanted him to do, just to be absorbed in thinking of Krishna. Internally, he was experiencing ecstasy. He was so happy, he didn't even want to be recognized or honored by others. He purposely made himself look like a fool. His father would tell him, you pass stool and then you bathe afterwards. So he did the opposite. And the father was so kind and loving, he kept on trying to train the son. But then he died, and so the brothers were merciless. They just gave him the worst jobs, to guard the field at night so wild pigs don't eat the vegetables. He never protested. He wanted to be out of this material association. Nothing, absolutely zero. No material association. Although this is not our particular form of devotional service, not given by our spiritual master, we can apply these principles. They're very applicable. Like when you're on book decision, we don't want to associate with persons in the three modes, but we want to give our association to them. As these great book distributors, they're going out, they have lots of what you might think that the association with non-devotees. They're associating 12 hours a day on book distribution. These empowered Maharatis like Parameshwara. But you see, they're giving their association. They're not taking. They're actually, their spiritual energy is so high that they're either they get the person to take the book and then Prabhupada is giving, then they get Prabhupada's association. Or by their own spiritual energies, they're inspiring people to take the next step in devotional service. Because they've reached the stage where they're not influenced by the externals. They're ready to go on the attack. They can attack the forces of illusion instead of being always in defense mode, hiding in the temple, quivering in fear of the onslaughts of the material energy. That's the Kanishtha stage. So we're advised to progress to the Madhyama stage. That's when Bhakti Yoga becomes relishable. In the Kanishtha stage, one is always in anxiety from so many causes, material desires, falling back into illusion, the difficulties of the material world. One is always thinking about himself. Always it's me. What is my situation? That's very unfortunate, because real happiness begins when you forget about yourself. Even the karmis and vikarmis have the understanding, because they go to a movie to forget themselves for 2 hours at least. Unfortunately, the self reappears, or the false self. The ahankara reappears as soon as the movie ends, because you cannot... They have not adopted the process to truly get rid of the false self. Everyone knows, actually, every human being on the planet knows that real happiness means to forget yourself. But the only way you can truly forget the false self, this is ahankara, is to be deeply, intensely absorbed in devotional service. So this is what we're striving for. This is we are striving for this very much. And Prabhupada is quoting one great acharya in our lineage, Madhavendra Puri. He actually began the whole mood of Vipralamba Seva. It's described in Madhula chapter 4. His spiritual master was Lakshmipati Tirtha, a pure devotee, but in a different mood. So Madhavendrapuri actually began the whole mood of our sampradaya. Lord Chaitanya could have started the mood. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he always gives credit to his devotees. He had several very advanced devotees, Nityasiddha, from the camp of Srimati Radharani, come before him. Ishvarapuri, his Diksha Guru, and Ishvarapuri's spiritual master was Madhavendrapuri. So they brought the mood of Vipralamba or Viraha. These are the two Sanskrit words, Vipralamba or Viraha. They mean Srimati Radharani's ecstatic mood of separation from Krishna. When Akrura came to take Krishna away, this is the intense longing, the crying, the intense desire to be with Krishna, to satisfy Krishna's senses. The gopis actually had no desire for their own sense gratification. When it's described that it appeared like to be lust, it's because their eagerness was so great, it's compared to lust. But it actually has nothing to do with material lust. They just had an intense longing to satisfy Krishna's senses. And if Krishna leaves Vrindavan, how can they satisfy Krishna's senses? How can they perform their seva? Their seva is to satisfy Krishna's senses. They cannot do it if Krishna is gone. Or when Uddhava returned, Krishna sent Uddhava to Sri Vrindavan Dham, and the gopis had been pining for years, and when each moment seems like a whole yuga. They had been pining for so long in separation. This is the mood that Madhavendrapuri brought and the mood that Lord Chaitanya developed. So all Gaudiya Vaishnavas accept this mood, as described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that the mood actually began with Madhavendrapuri, because Lord Chaitanya wanted to always give credit to his devotees. Krishna gave credit to Arjuna. Arjuna looked like the victor of the battle of Kurukshetra. Krishna arranged everything. Krishna always gives credit to his pure devotees. Mayavadis are not very ambitious. They just want to be equal to God. That's a very unambitious achievement. The pure devotees become greater than God. Of course, they're not thinking to become greater than God, but that's because Krishna loves them so much. He makes sure that their position is advertised. Madhavendrapuri tried to avoid being glorified again and again. If you read Madhula chapter 4, because his devotional service was super excellent, Krishna would do things like steal kheer for him. But when the people found out, he left town. He didn't want to be glorified. He had to get out of town as quickly as possible. Imagine if Kishore hid some part of the offering. That's what the deity did. Kheer Chara Gopinath deity decided to just hide, keep part of the offering on the altar behind his cloth. Now it's interesting because the pujari knows every square centimeter of the altar. They clean them regularly. And Prabhupada said it's because of Lord Kshir Chora Gopinath's tricks. Because of my tricks, you did not. The Lord told the pujari in a dream, you didn't see the sweet rice because of my tricks. This is directly in Madhula chapter 4. The deity actually stole some sweet rice and kept it hidden. And then in a dream that night, the deity came to the pujari late at night after the pujari had already locked up and went home. Then the deity appeared in a dream and said, I've kept one pot of sweet rice hidden behind my cloth. You did not see it because of my tricks. So you should wake up now, come open the altar. It was the middle of the night. The pujari was also a very great devotee of the Lord. Several times the Lord approached him in dreams to give him orders. Even pujaris in London have told me similar stories. If you're a very serious pujari, you can actually, this is the power of deity worship, you can directly interact with the deity. The deity will talk to you. The deity even walked for one great devotee, Sakshi Gopal, walked 1,000 miles. It's dependent on us. It's up to us to take the steps in devotional service which will allow the deity to want to be pleased with our service to the extent that the deity will desire to reveal himself to us. You can mechanically worship the deity and then the deity appears to be just like stone. The deity is non-different from Krishna. It's up to you how much you want of Krishna or how little you want of Krishna. You can't blame Krishna if Krishna is not revealing himself because we have not develop the correct attitude, the intense longing for service. That's when Krishna becomes pleased to want to reveal himself. So the deity, he woke up the pujari And the pujari came to the temple, opened the door, and found this, the pot of sweet rice sitting right there. And then the deity said, now go out, go to the marketplace. There's a sannyasi who's just sitting there chanting. Madhavanpuri didn't sleep. Maybe he dozed for 1 or 2 hours, Prabhupada described, at the end of the night. But for advanced devotees, sleep is optional. And eating. Madhavanpuri didn't eat. He never got anything of his own accord. He simply fasted until someone offered him something. That might involve many days or even a week. He just didn't bother with it. He just didn't matter. His renunciation, which is an insignificant byproduct of pure bhakti. If you have pure bhakti, renunciation is an insignificant byproduct. So he just didn't feel like eating. But he considered it devotional service if someone offered him Mahaprasada, the deity, that you cannot refuse. So as an act of devotional service, he would eat something. So sleeping and eating are optional. Madhavanpuri was out in the marketplace. He was just chanting in ecstasy all night long. He could chant constantly Krishna's holy name, continuously in ecstasy. He was experiencing Radha and Krishna through sound vibration. So he was out in the marketplace, the empty marketplace. It was at night. It was like midnight. So the pujari, he brought out the sweet rice and he called out in the different stalls because he couldn't see exactly where Madhavanpuri was. It was a abandoned marketplace, empty marketplace at night. So he called out in every stall. He said, the deity has stolen sweet rice for you. You're the most fortunate person in the three worlds, he said. The pujari said to Madhavanpuri. Madhavanpuri was very embarrassed. But the pujari kept calling again and again, come, take the sweet rice. You're the most fortunate person in the universe. So Madhavanpuri came out, and the priest told him the whole story, how the deity deliberately kept behind one pot. And just hearing this story, this is from Madhula chapter 4, Madhavanpuri went into ecstatic trance, just hearing how much Krishna loves, how much Krishna reciprocates with the devotee. And of course, the highest devotee is thinking, the Lord is reciprocating with me. That's incredible. I'm the lowest, garbage, useless personality, and still the Lord is reciprocating. Even though they're the highest, they actually think they're the lowest. It's inconceivable. It's literally inconceivable. How can they not know that they're great devotees? We're very eager to let everyone know if we achieve any small advancement. So such was the situation. So Madhavanpuri actually had to leave. He left town. He accepted the sweet rice, went into ecstasy just hearing the story of the pujari narrated the whole story, how the deity deliberately did that. And then he drank the sweet rice, and then he broke the pot, washed the pot, broke it into many pieces, and each day would eat a small piece of the earthen pot. He kept it in a cloth. See, it's devotion. His eating was not an act of sense gratification. It was an act of devotion. Everything about him was just pure devotional service. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya accepted him as his param guru. And Ishvarapuri got the mercy of Madhavanpuri. That's another whole story. And the Kala Danda. Now the time factor has truncated our exposition. So maybe we have time for one quick question. See, we're very fortunate just hearing about these great Vaishnava acharyas. This itself is devotional service, hearing about the activities of pure Vaishnavas. It's a very important aspect of devotional service because this is your role model. You have to have a role model. The karmis and vikarmis have a role model. They have a clear conception of what they want to be. It's displayed on the bumper sticker, party animal on board. Party animal on board. So the goal is very clearly defined. There's no ambiguity what the goal is. Unbridled sense gratification. And we're coming from this culture. So if we have to substitute new role. We have a whole new life. We have new scriptures, new books to read, new mantras to chant, new persons to emulate. We're changing our paradigm entirely. So we have to have role models. So the role models are the great personalities described in Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and other literatures. Therefore, it's extremely valuable to hear about these pure devotees. It's the most valuable thing. And you can pray to the great acharyas on their appearance days, And if you're out on book decision, this is how you can isolate yourself from the pernicious effects, the onslaught of Kali Yuga, by meditating on pure devotees. There's so many pure devotees: Jiva Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, Madhava Nupuri, Haridas Thakur, Vakreshwara Pandit, Vasudev Dat, whose body, who Lord Chaitanya said his body belonged to. All of their leelas are described. This is our life and soul, actually. This is our meditation. It's not a peripheral aspect of devotional service. It's a major aspect, hearing the glories. It's even more pleasing to Krishna when we glorify his pure devotees. If you have a choice, of course, we should know both Krishna's pastimes in detail and the devotees. But if you have a choice, Krishna says it's even better to glorify the devotees. Because the devotee's whole life is devotion to Krishna. That's all it is. There's nothing else of these topmost personalities.
Thank you for your class. You were telling the story of how Srila Prabhupada received a mission from his spiritual master. And I was thinking about how when you're given a high bar in life, a high mission, it forces you to come up. So I was talking to Jajan Prabhupada recently, and he was kind of sharing with me how, but nowadays, you know, the spiritual masters, they know that we have a tendency to not follow their instructions. So they may not give us a mission like that. They may not tell us, like, hey, you go in. And also, as you were saying, Bhakti Sansara Sagar could see the future, so he knew Prabhupada was an exalted soul. And at least for myself, I know I'm not that kind of a person, so I'm not going to get a mission like that in life. But in the back of my head, I still think when you have a mission, then it forces you to come up in life. So how do we reconcile the gap between my inability to actually execute the mission that my spiritual master may ask me to fulfill versus there's great benefit in having a mission in life, but I'm unable to... How do we reconcile the gap? Or how do we understand?
You can take on the mission to any extent you desire. You can make it your goal in life to make Chicago Krishna conscious. There's millions of people. That's a very ambitious goal, that you want to make the city of Chicago Krishna conscious. So you go out every day on book decision. Just being steady is a great achievement. Steadily doing your sadhana, not falling into ignorance or illusion, serving the other devotees, going out every day and doing book distribution. That itself is a wonderful achievement. If you can do 20 hard Gitas a day, steadily, that's a great service. That's a wonderful service. Prabhupada emphasized that. Towards the end of Prabhupada's manifest pastimes, he would mainly just tell the devotees, just be steady, just do your service nicely, steadily, and be a good example for all the other Vaishnavas. Just, if you can just do 20 hard Gitas a day, that would be a great thing, wouldn't it? 20 hard Gitas a day. Parmesha on Warp Tour, they do... Well, Madhukari did 212 Gitas one day. They do around 150 Gitas a day on Warp Tour. But we can, the more we try, we have to try according to our level. We cannot take on an impossibly difficult thing because we still find the word in our dictionary. We haven't yet advanced to the stage where that word is not in our dictionary. But you see, if you're progressive, you move forward. Like, you take on something that you thought you couldn't do, then you find you can do it, and then you get some confidence and you try the next step and the next step. You can step by step increase your devotional service. Just the point is to be moving, to try to not be static. not to try to find a comfortable situation. That's what I'm saying is a bad situation, is to only look for a comfortable situation in devotional service. We know very well what Prabhupada wanted. Prabhupada was not ambiguous. Prabhupada would be very pleased with you if you do 20 Gitas a day for the rest of your life. Prabhupada would be very pleased with you. That's a great achievement. When Tripurari Maharaj, Prabhupada called him the incarnation of book distribution. Before Prabhupada gave him sannyas, when he asked Prabhupada to give him sannyas, and Prabhupada said, there's no need, you're already doing more than any sannyasi in our movement. Just because he was real steady, he was steadily distributing books and training other devotees. He would go around to different temples and train others to share the mercy and increase the overall level of book distribution by inspiring other devotees. That's a big part of our devotional service. inspiring other devotees. I didn't hear.
Less than 20.
Oh, do less than 20? Well, if you're genuinely trying, I shouldn't. It's not a matter of numerical, it's a matter of you're honestly trying. You're honestly trying to do whatever you can do. And in summer, there are big festivals in Chicago. Summertime, you should take advantage of street events and festivals where you can do 100 Gitas in a day. It's actually possible. Madhukari says that Chicago is one of the best places for book distribution in the whole country. So you're very fortunate. Srila Prabhupada ki.